The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the last time I was here, which was just over a month ago, I just got back from teaching the March month-long at Spirit Rock, and so I'm still kind of in that space a little bit. Although when I left, the day I left, I offered a talk on working with thinking and thoughts in our meditation practice, and I had said that I would explore when I got back offering a talk on working with thoughts in daily life. And so that's what we'll explore today. It's possible to be mindful of anything. We might not believe that sometimes because there's certain experiences we have, like thinking. Other ones like maybe sleepiness or spacing out or something like that, that we often get lost in, that we often are unaware, where mindfulness is, what I would say, habitually unaware in these states, especially when thinking gets strong. The mind has a habit of kind of taking birth in the world of our thought, and in that, kind of landing in that thought bubble, we lose touch with the present moment. It can be quite startling sometimes, this experience of being in that thought bubble and then coming out of it. Especially the more we become familiar with our minds, the more we see just how seductive and how real those thoughts can seem. At one point, a couple of years after I had broken up with a partner, I had done quite a bit of work and didn't have so much reactivity when those thoughts arose. But at one point, I was walking down a street, just kind of doing daily things and recognized that I was coming out of a thought where I was back in relationship with that partner. And the mind had so thoroughly believed it, that there was confusion when I came out of that thought. It's like, what? Wait a minute. No, wait, I'm not in relationship with that person anymore. What? So there was a kind of a way in which the mind had so thoroughly believed that thought. And it was kind of clear and highlighted to me in a way because I had done so much work to let go of the anger and the sadness and the feeling of betrayal around that relationship, that there was not an emotional reaction. It was simply, there wasn't a feeling of reactivity when I came out of that thought, except for this kind of confusion. Wow, the mind had so thoroughly believed that. It was like it had created this world in which I was back in relationship with that person. And seeing that was kind of humbling, to recognize just how powerful the world of thoughts is when we're not aware of it. And so it is possible to be aware of thoughts, but we do have this habit, a habit of not being aware of thoughts. In our meditation practice, we explore that moment when we remember, I pointed to it in the guided meditation, that moment when we remember, that moment when we come out of thinking. And often the instruction is, see if you can let go of the content of the thought and come back to the breath. I like to add something in the middle there, which I pointed to in the guided meditation. Maybe let go of the thoughts themselves, but see, how have those thoughts affected you? Thoughts are incredibly powerful. They can radically change our landscape of experience. Even a word can change the landscape of our experience. Just an example of that right now. Let's just take 20 seconds to close the eyes and settle in, feeling into your experience, checking in with the breathing. And I'm going to add some words to your meditation. And your job isn't to think about the word, but just to notice how these words affect you. What happens as I say these words? Frustration. Agitation. Calm. Peace. So how many of you noticed something happen when I added those words? Just raising your hands. Yeah, most of you. This is, for those of you who noticed that, who saw a shift in your experience with those words, this is a kind of a demonstration of how powerful words are. When even a single word arises in our mind, it can change the landscape of our experience. And we are thinking words all day long. This is creating all kinds of stuff going on inside of us. And often we get caught in the content, but we also get lost in the responses to those thoughts. And those responses can then generate further thoughts. We hear something on the radio, we think about it, we react, we think about that reaction and what we should do about it. It's a cycle, often, when we are not aware of what's happening. And so with exploring being aware of thoughts, I mean, it's really a good thing that we can be aware of thoughts and be aware of thinking. Because if it weren't possible, there would be huge chunks of our daily life that would be off limits, because we do have to think to navigate our lives. When we're sitting in meditation, we don't have to think so much, because we're sitting here, we don't have to do anything. And so we can, in sitting meditation, we can kind of let go of the content and feel into how that content has affected us in the present moment. And perhaps return to the breath in favor of really staying connected and present, because thoughts do have a very powerful pull on our mind. There's a habit of that non-mindfulness, and so when thoughts arise, we easily slip into that habit. And yet in daily life, one of the key things in terms of working with the thoughts that come up is some amount of engagement with the content. We do have to think, and we have to be attentive to the content of what we're thinking. We can't simply always just dismiss the content and feel into how we are in daily life. I mean, thinking is a part of how our organism evolved to take care of itself, and so it's necessary. Thinking is a part of being human. And so the question becomes, how do we engage skillfully with thoughts? And a piece of it is this noticing how the content affects us, being aware when content does have a kind of an emotional effect on our system. and taking that in. One of my teachers, my Burmese teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, offers this exploration around this kind of practice to, he calls it 50-50 mindfulness. 50% of the attention connecting with the content, being aware of the content, and 50% of the attention connecting to how we are with that content. It can be a little bit of a back and forth at first, knowing the content, feeling into how we are. But over time, it becomes more natural to recognize them kind of simultaneously. So that's a big part of this. And yet the first thing that we need to do is begin to become aware while we're thinking. So the Buddha offered a few reflections on this. And the first, one of the first pieces he pointed to is beginning to check into different kinds of thoughts that we have. He pointed to, in his own practice, he said, when I was sitting, I was noticing there was lots of thinking happening. And he didn't describe what I did was push the thought away and come back to the breath. What he described was a reflection a little bit about on what is that thought? What's the content of that thought? Is it based in kindness, compassion, and letting go? Or is it based in ill will, sense desire, or cruelty? And so he kind of divided his thoughts along these lines. Are these skillful thoughts, helpful thoughts, or are they kind of cruel, mean thoughts, or are they kind of associated with this desire of having what I want, getting rid of what I don't want? And so he began to look at that. And he noticed that when he was thinking thoughts that were connected with ill will, cruelty, and sense desire, there was some agitation in the sense system. And he reflected, wow, these kinds of thoughts aren't helpful. They lead to affliction to myself, to others, to both. And so he said, I reflected on the drawbacks of those thoughts. And so he actually used a kind of thought to help him kind of recognize and navigate those unskillful thoughts. Just to reflect on the drawback of those thoughts. These are not helpful. They don't allow the mind to settle. They are not leading to ease and peace. This is one piece, I think, one aspect of our practice that is so helpful to recognize. When we're caught in thoughts of cruelty or ill will or sense desire, some part of our mind thinks it's leading somewhere. It thinks it's helping us. Maybe it feels like it's protecting us, keeping us safe, or maybe it feels like it's helping us to feel more ease and more peace. And so our system is kind of designed to move in that direction, towards well-being, towards ease, towards peace. And yet, our mind has also confused itself into believing that thoughts of ill will, thoughts of cruelty, thoughts of sense desire are somehow helping us, somehow leading us towards more ease and more peace. And so the Buddha began to recognize that in the moment of feeling a thought of ill will, in the moment of feeling a thought of sense desire, there's already some agitation going on. And not only that, if we act on those thoughts, act on thoughts of ill will, act on thoughts of sense desire, they kind of condition those kinds of activities. They can further condition those kinds of thoughts so we have more of them. It's like we get trapped in a spiral of, well, I've acted on this thought of sense desire and I got what I want. And that actually made me feel better for a few minutes. But then the happiness of that kind of goes away, and we kind of have to go back to, well, when was the last time I felt good? Well, it was when I got what I wanted, or when I got rid of what I didn't want. And what do I want? What do I want to get rid of? And so we kind of, that's the only way that we know, in a way, that's the only way that we know to move towards happiness and ease and peace. And yet, what I think the Buddha, sometimes I think the Buddha was pointing to is that the way towards ease and peace is not when we are in the present moment feeling non-ease and non-peace. That is not the way towards ease and peace. And so if there's any kind of giving over of, well, I can feel this kind of agitation now. It feels kind of off to feel this ill will, but I know that once I get rid of that thing or fix that situation, then I'll feel better. That, the Buddha described as being delusion. Because while we will potentially feel better in the future as after we get rid of that thing, it's a very transient kind of feeling better. And that what we're cultivating, what we're encouraging, is this feeling of ill will itself, which has a quality of non-peace, non-ease in the moment. And so as we begin to look in the moment, how are these thoughts affecting us? We see, oh, thoughts of ill will, cruelty, sense desire are not onward leading. They do not lead to peace. They do not lead to ease. And so in some ways we can say, I just read a quote by Gandhi this morning. There is no path to peace. Peace is the path. And that is what is being pointed to here. That when we are engaged in something that is non-peaceful, non-easeful in the moment, it is not the path to peace. It is not the path to ease. So as we become mindful and aware of what's happening in the moment, we get better information. We get more true information about what ease and peace, what the possibility for ease and peace are. And so this is his first reflection around looking at the content of thoughts and checking in. Do these thoughts lead onward? And so this is one of the drawbacks of thoughts of ill will, sense, desire, cruelty, that they are not creating peace in the present moment. They are not conditioning that possibility of peace. They're actually conditioning ill will, sense, desire, and cruelty. That would be what we would tend to move towards. And so, just reflecting on this, do these thoughts lead to affliction or do they lead to happiness? And yet we're not trying to repress the thinking that's happening. And then here again, the Buddha didn't say, when I notice thoughts of ill will, cruelty, and sense desire, I suppress them. He said, I reflected on these cause affliction. I reflected on these do not lead to peace. Reflecting on the drawbacks of the thought. This creates conditions. Again, this creates conditions for the mind to begin to shift its relationship to the habits around these thoughts, the habits of which are believing in the, you know, a powerful habit around aversion, for instance, is believing that if I get rid of this thing, that's what's going to make me happy. It does create a little bit of happiness to get rid of what you don't want, to get rid of something that's unpleasant, but it is such a tiny kind of happiness in comparison to the kind of happiness that comes with this cultivation of non-aversion, non-greed. And so this to me, this points to a tool in our practice, which we don't often use in meditation so much, but can be useful in daily life, and actually can be useful on the cushion at times too, to use thoughts. And so this is what the Buddha suggested. I reflected. I thought about the drawbacks. I realized these thoughts create harm. And so it's bringing in skillful thoughts can support us in working with challenging thoughts. Another aspect that can be useful in working with thoughts in daily life is to kind of use the wise speech guidelines around our thoughts. Thoughts can be thought of sometimes as a kind of an inner speech. And so to look at what the Buddha recommended in terms of external speech or actual speech, and then begin to explore our thoughts from that perspective. This is maybe another way into looking at, are these thoughts helpful or not helpful? In speech, we can check into before we speak. We can check in, are these thoughts true? I mean, is what I'm going to say true? Is what I'm going to say kind? Is what I'm going to say necessary? This is one framing of the wise speech guidelines. The Buddha actually offered that we should not engage in speech that's false, harsh, divisive, or idle. So not engaging in harsh speech, false speech, divisive speech, or idle chatter. And in addition, he encouraged us to check in, is the speech timely? Is it the right time to say this thing? And is it going to be beneficial? And all of those three can be kind of collapsed into the simpler reflection, is it true? Is it kind? And is it necessary? So reflecting on the truth of our thoughts. Is this thought even true? Again, this is a reflection, not to suppress the thoughts, not to try to stop them, but along the lines of the Buddha saying, I reflected on these thoughts. What kind of thought is it? This is another way in. Is this a true thought? So many of our thoughts are not objectively true. For instance, we may be thinking thoughts of judging ourselves or judging other people. And judging is often based on views, opinions, ideas, not based on facts. And so this judgment arises in my own mind. I'm a failure. Is that true? Is it true that I'm a failure? Well, it may be true that in this moment I have not succeeded at a particular task that I had some idea about how well I should do at. But that's what's actually happening, is that I had an idea about how well I should do, and I didn't do that. Or I had an idea about what I should be able to do, and that wasn't what happened. So that's more true. And yet this extra layer of judgment, I'm a failure. That's a kind of a broader statement about who I am, rather than being a kind of a, you know, more precise or accurate description of what happened. And so also with others, you know, when we might notice that we're judging others. This happens a lot, having just taught this month-long retreat. It's so interesting to hear the descriptions of people in their practice discussions with us about, you know, when we're on these long retreats, you have maybe, you know, an hour or so to check in with a few people on the retreat, and so largely you don't know anything about the people you're sitting with. You know, very little. And people come in and start describing and reporting, I just have all of these beliefs about this person. I know nothing about them, but my mind is constructing all of this stuff that it believes about them. And so, and this happens to us in daily life as well. You know, we see somebody on the street, the way they walk, and boom, we think we know something about them. So this notion of judging when we judge other people could be useful to check in. What are the assumptions behind this? So what's happening underneath? Where is this judgment coming from? Is this assumption even based in something I know? Or is it a complete construct of the mind? And so this is a piece around looking at belief in our mind. Because often our judgments are based on things that we believe, and yet those beliefs are often simply views, opinions, ideas. They're not really grounded in truth. And so we can explore and look at, oh, this is what's being believed right now. So here's the assumption, and this is what the mind is believing. Not to, again, say, I shouldn't believe that, but to recognize that it is a belief as opposed to truth. That's a huge difference. It's a very big difference in our minds when we recognize this is something that's being believed as opposed to simply believing it as true. Vast difference in those two. That gives us the opportunity to have a little bit of a step back and recognize, okay, it's being believed. I am believing that. But it opens the door just a little crack to recognize, well, maybe, and maybe not. Maybe that belief is true, maybe not. And then kindness, reflecting on the kindness of our thoughts. Again, we can have harsh speech, divisive speech towards ourselves, towards others. Harsh thoughts, divisive thoughts towards ourselves, towards others. So just recognizing, again, does this thought, and sometimes it's the tone in our thought, the tone of it is harsh. So again, just recognizing, oh, these thoughts are harsh. And so sometimes harsh thoughts, I've seen in my own experience, sometimes harsh thoughts are, they're kind of like, it's like my mind believes sometimes, especially when I'm thinking harsh thoughts about myself. It's like my mind thinks that this harshness is necessary in order that I don't do something unskillful. It's like I think, I need to tell myself that's a really bad thing that you did, you know, with a kind of a harsh tone in the voice, harsh tone in the mind around this thing. You know, this was a bad thing, bad person. And that harshness itself has an effect on us. So that there's a kind of an interesting distinction. Again, it's not that we're repressing that kind of thought, but kind of being curious, what's going on there? In my own experience in exploring that kind of thought, I realized there's a piece of it that's a recognition of, oh, wow, it doesn't feel good to have done something that caused somebody else to hurt. It doesn't feel good to have done something that had an ethical kind of spin to it. And so our heart kind of resonates there. Our heart resonates with the sense of, it's this conscience. Our system is designed to recognize and feel when we've done something that's created harm, either for ourselves or for others. And so that feeling can have a little bit of a fluttery quality to it. And that itself is not telling ourselves we're a bad person. It's more of a simple, truthful acknowledgement. Oh, this is what it feels like when I've done something that created harm. And so that is an interesting kind of place to explore in our minds, that shift or the slip in our minds from kind of just the simple recognition of, oh, it hurts to have done harm, and I'm a bad person for having done that. There's no truth to the bad person part. It's more of a judgment. It's more of the mind kind of constricting and identifying with that action. There can be more capacity for us to navigate the world if we can recognize and own our unskillful actions, speak to them, and not constrict down around it. So the heart can stay open. the kindness of our thoughts, actually the reflection of, it feels like this to have done something harmful. That is a kindness, both to ourselves and others. So it can be a kind of a slippery slope there, but it's worth exploring that. And then the necessity, are thoughts necessary? So many of our thoughts are not necessary. This is quite amazing to look at. Much of our thoughts are just neuronal firings. We see something and it reminds us of something, and then we start thinking about that, and then we start thinking about something that reminds us of. We've got this kind of associative nature to our thoughts, and so easily we just wander off into some landscape that was simply kind of triggered because we saw something not necessary to think about. So a lot of our thoughts serve some kind of familiar purpose. A lot of the purpose of these, what we might call unnecessary thoughts, is a reinforcement of the story of me. This is what I do. This is who I am. This is how I think about things. This is why I'm better than others. This is why I'm not better than others. This is why I'm the same as others. All of these kind of comparisons and judgments. So look at your thoughts and see how many of them have the word I or me in them. And if they don't have I or me in them, they might have they and them in them, which is another version of identification, of selfing, of the story of me. It's like, well, they do that. And kind of in the subtext is, I do this. So just noticing how much of our thoughts revolve around the story of me. And is it necessary? What's necessary in terms of our thinking? What purpose is the thought serving? Is another way in here. You know, what's going on here? What purpose is the thought serving? Now, sometimes it can seem like we are just kind of drifting in what might seem to be idle thought or unnecessary thought, but it's actually serving a purpose of creativity or allowing there to be a kind of a letting go of. Sometimes I find my mind kind of drifts into relaxation and it wanders into a kind of a drifting thinking that's not purposeful, and yet the state itself, the drifting state itself, serves a purpose of relaxing, of letting go. And so in exploring that kind of thought, something I've seen really useful, and this happened in one morning in my breakfast table. I was exploring this possibility of being really present for what I was doing and like eating my breakfast. I am aware of eating breakfast. So I was kind of directing the attention and noticing the eating, and the mind kept wandering. And I would notice that and I would have the idea, what being mindful means is paying attention to eating breakfast. And I kept seeing this happen. At some point, I got curious because it happened over and over again, this kind of wandering into these spacing out thoughts, these drifting kind of thoughts. And at some point I recognized that when I woke up into that, there was a kind of a softness in the mind. There was kind of a relaxation in the mind. And there was a recognition, that state in which the mind lost mindfulness and was just kind of drifting around and it's like foggy thinking, that state was one of resting. And then I could become aware of that resting quality in the mind, which had the thoughts there, the thoughts that were in that, they weren't necessary at that point, but the state itself and the mind recognized, wow, I'm tired. This feels good. It feels good to not be doing the meditation practice as I thought it was. It's just like, the mind is resting. And in that resting, it rested in that state for about 30 seconds. And then there was a lot of clarity. Just being present with ease, being present for what was happening, the eating, the sitting in the room, the feeling of the body. There was just this easeful presence. But so sometimes when the mind wanders off into thoughts like that, it's useful when we wake up into those thoughts to be curious about the state in the mind. Sometimes the mind wanders into aversion and stories about what we were doing in the past. Sometimes it wanders into all of that kind of stuff. And often when we wake up into those kinds of thoughts, you know, the thoughts about arguing with a friend or thoughts about planning for something and getting agitated about, is it going to go right? Is it going to go well? You know, all of that, when we wake up into them, there can be agitation in the system. And useful to know that, useful to recognize, oh, those kinds of thoughts lead to agitation in the moment. And yet sometimes when we wake up into thoughts, we find the mind is actually more relaxed. And so can you be curious about that state itself? Be curious about the quality of that. Oh, the mind is resting. The mind is curious, or kind of, at some point today as I was driving here, knowing I was going to talk about thoughts, I was doing this exploration, and I noticed the mind kind of drift out into thoughts of, you know, oh, I was creating plans for a future retreat, you know, Dharma talk topics for a future retreat. And there was a way in which there was some creativity there. And it wasn't like nervous or concerned or agitated about it. It was just in that field of exploring, oh, this topic, that might be interesting. How could that work? And so that was more of a creative kind of place. In the moment of coming back into the present with that thought, I kind of made a bookmark about that. Ah, okay, not the time to think about this right now. I am driving. And that's an interesting thought. So let me kind of remember that and reflect on it later. So what purpose are our thoughts serving? Some of these thoughts, of course, are necessary. We do need to think to navigate our lives. A lot of the thinking that we need to do to navigate our lives, though, is a very rudimentary kind of thinking. It doesn't have to go so much into the story of how it's going to be for me when I get there, or what's going to, you know, is it going to be this way or that way? Just like, I get up. There's a little bit of planning that needs to happen about what I'm going to wear and what I'm going to eat, and the process of making breakfast requires some thinking. Oh, there's a pear, I need to cut it. I mean, it's like really simple thinking that can happen here. And there's a lot of ease that can be there when we kind of stay in this terrain of just the functional, what's functional around thinking, and recognize when the mind kind of shifts from functional thinking, what we might call necessary thinking, to unnecessary thinking. That's a place where we definitely can get hooked. So the busyness of life definitely makes this a hard practice. It's not easy to engage in working with thinking in daily life. And yet it is a skill. It is something that we can learn. It is possible to cultivate this skill. In our sitting practice, we have so much more support for waking up and recognizing thinking is happening, because there's such a contrast between the world the mind creates in the thoughts and sitting here in stillness with our eyes closed. We wake up into this world of thought, arguing with a friend from a week ago, and we wake up in that in sitting meditation, and it's pretty clear, oh, that's a thought. I was just in this world of thinking, and that's not what's happening right now. Okay, so how does that affect me having been thinking about that? What's going on now as a result of thinking? In daily life, sometimes our thought worlds are kind of more related to what we're doing, and so it can be harder to distinguish that we are actually lost in thought because we're thinking about what we're doing. So it's a skill. How do we learn a skill of this kind? So I like to point to, like any other skill, it takes practice and it takes commitment. And it takes some wisdom about how to engage in learning a skill. So with another skill, like the skill of learning to play basketball, we don't start in that kind of learning by just putting ourselves into the midst of a game with people who know how to play the game really well. We start by ourselves learning the skills of dribbling and shooting. And so we practice on our own a little bit. And then we maybe find a friend who knows that we're beginner and they're not going to plow us over. And they help us. Maybe they point out some things. They point out, oh, you could try it this way or you could try it that way. And then as we gain some skill there, we might put ourselves into a game with some more friends, an actual game, and we learn more there using our skills. And so likewise with working with thinking, useful to start in this in simple ways where we can practice when it's not in the midst of the most complicated situation in our lives. So start with simple things. Perhaps a chore you do regularly in the morning. Exploring, recognizing while you're doing that, brushing your teeth or maybe preparing your breakfast or washing the dishes. Not to try to, again, like I did with the eating breakfast, I was trying to force myself to be mindful of something in particular rather than just kind of being more receptive. What's going on right now? How is this being right now? What's going on in the mind? And when I began to do that, it became clear the mind was kind of drifting. So while making breakfast, while washing dishes, just beginning to notice, okay, this is what's happening. And oh, the mind is kind of thinking about what I'm going to do next. It kind of creates images of the next things we're going to do. This is a form of thinking. And so we can begin to, in simple places where we're not in a lot of interaction, begin to recognize maybe some simple things about, okay, these thoughts that are coming up, are they necessary? Yeah, I do need to think about how I'm going to get to work or what I'm going to do. Or maybe, actually, I don't need to think about that right now because I have time when I get to work to think about what I'm going to do when I get to work. So I can let that thought go and just be here. And so looking at the necessity of thoughts in a simple, structured kind of place. You might make the sink in your kitchen your practicing mindfulness with thoughts place. You know, something that you just do regularly. Put a big sign in front of it to help you remember to do that. Just reflecting, are these thoughts true? Are they necessary? Are they kind? And then the next level might be still alone, but practicing with more content that's coming in. This is a big place, I think, where thoughts get very stirred up. Is when we are in conversation with people and they're putting content out into the world and our mind is responding to that content. We're putting content out into the world and people may be, you know, responding to our content. This is a place where being aware of thinking can be very challenging. And so a kind of more structured way to play with this when you are alone is to practice with what happens in thought when you're reading and writing. When we're writing, it's creating content in our mind and offering it to somebody. And as we're writing, we can begin to reflect, what are the thoughts going on here? Need to write this message. I need to communicate this information. Okay, well, those thoughts are coming up. And, oh, and there's this reaction when I think about this part. So the content that's being created here to communicate, we can recognize, there's a reaction here. Maybe take some care with how I write this part of the message. And so this can be kind of slowing down our ability to engage with the content that's coming up in our mind, the thoughts that are coming up in the mind. Again, are these thoughts true? Is what I'm going to communicate true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And in reading, There we're taking in the content of somebody else's mind. And the exploration there would be, how am I with this content? What kind of thoughts come up around this content? Oh, that's wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. Oh, that's interesting. Maybe I should explore that a little bit. And then as we're thinking about that, we don't hear the rest of what people are saying because we're lost in our own thoughts. And so, you know, in the reading, we probably would stop reading at that point. So we might begin to recognize, oh, wow, the mind got hooked by that and started thinking about it. So reading gives us an opportunity to see what are our thoughts in relationship to somebody else's mind. And then another way to practice more, moving more into natural daily activities, but still structured, would be inviting a friend to go on a mindful speaking lunch date. A friend who's interested in this kind of thing. And encouraging each other. So this is like, you know, having your friend help you with the basketball game. Like encouraging each other to pause for a moment before speaking so that you can know the thoughts that come up in your mind before they come out as speech. You can help each other in this way, pausing before speaking. One time I did this with a friend, very dear friend, and we went out to lunch and had agreed to do this. And we sat there for a little while. I don't know what was going on in his mind, but what was going on in my mind was I was thinking about something to say and realizing, oh, that's a little bit judgmental. Won't say that. The next thing arose, oh, that's got a lot of like selfing in it. Maybe I shouldn't say that. And so I was sitting there ruling out things to say because they weren't true, necessary, kind. And I, after a while of this, I said, I am sitting here ruling out things to say. And that was true and interesting, I thought, in terms of what we were doing together. I could describe to him what was going on in my experience. And so it was very enlightening to see, you know, even sitting down with a dear friend, just how much habitual stuff tends to be put up in our minds when we are in engagement with people. And then, as we move into more challenging, the regular daily life that's not so structured, this is where it's really challenging to be aware of what's going on in our minds, to be aware of what we're thinking, our reactions to it, to be aware of the content. It's like we can't just put a halt to the conversation and say, oh, wait a minute, I need to pay attention to my inner experience right now while we're having a conversation with our boss or something. You know, we can't do that. So we do the best we can. And then there's some things that we can explore. So first of all, do the best you can in the moment. And then, you know, get really good at cleaning up the mess if something you've said or done has created harm. Grounding yourself in non-harming as much as possible in your activities with people. Grounding yourself in maybe at the basic level, recognizing, wow, in this conversation, I'm getting really tense. You may not be able to do much more than that. Or maybe in this conversation, oh, there's a lot of ease. So just that simple recognition of ease or agitation while speaking can be really helpful. One piece I'm going to add, when we have a situation in our lives that got kind of messy because we weren't so aware of what was going on in that situation, a tool that, again, is using thought in our practice is to take some time at the end of the day to reflect on what happened, to allow yourself to be present and bring in, one way to do it is bring in the kind of the situation into your mind. So let yourself settle in meditation for maybe 5 minutes or so, and then know what you're going to reflect on as you're going into this. Bring up the situation in your mind and allow yourself to feel how it is in the moment, having recalled the situation. Because again, thoughts are really powerful. If we remember something that happened, it will tend to evoke in your system, and to evoke in your being similar reactions to what happened at the time. And so it's kind of a way to begin to get a little more familiar with being present in charged situations. When we choose to have a thought come up about a charged situation and have the intention to notice, oh, these are the feelings that are here. Oh, this pain, this constriction, this release as I think about this, so that we begin to recognize how we might navigate a situation like that in real time by practicing with it through reflection. It's a really helpful practice. That's sometimes I do, well, maybe next time I'll do that. It's like sometimes we'll do a whole session on that, which is, it's really a useful practice. So I will go into more depth than that next week. And I have a few minutes for comments or questions now. Yeah. And use the mic.
About 2.5 years ago, I had a interesting experience with regard to an earlier breakup, and I was the punchline is I was very aware that I was having two completely opposite, contradictory feelings at the same time. But fortunately, as I guess this was the product of meditating for a while, I was just sort of was aware that I had that there wasn't any tension between them. I was just aware that I was feeling these two completely opposite things. The year 2000, I had my one really acrimonious, horrible breakup of a relationship. Did not come in for a gentle landing, and she had cut off all contact with me and refused to speak to me. Now, 15 years later, which was October of 2015, I ran into her mother in Sacramento by accident. She was delighted to see me. And the news that she gave me was that in 2006, she had married this bad person that several of her friends advised her not to marry. Her mother had done an investigation into his.
So I think I need to stop
background.
The whole story.
Okay.
We don't have a lot of time left.
Okay. But anyway, what happened was she cut off contact with her mother. She cut her mother out of her life. And so the thing is, I had this simultaneous, because her mother investigated her husband's background, I simultaneously had these feelings I could finally fully forgive her, and these feelings of gleeful, mean-spirited schadenfreude that she had had these horrible things happen, married this horrible man. I was feeling both this strong forgiveness and this very mean glee that she was suffering at the same time.
And this can happen. And as you're a proof of, it can happen. And so, you know, to recognize that experience of both the mean-spiritedness. I think you might need to turn your mic on because I'm not sure it works to have both mics on at the same time. Yeah, thank you. So the mean-spiritedness.
It wasn't my money.
I know. I'm not sure what's going on. The mean-spiritedness is there, and the forgiveness is there, and you know, recognizing both the value of the forgiveness, the kind of the way the heart feels in the forgiveness has a different quality. And then the mean-spiritedness, we recognize, oh, that actually doesn't feel so good to feel that. Although the mind might think, oh yeah, it does feel good. You know, that does feel good because we are focusing on the other person or the situation. And so, you know, looking in again, that mean-spiritedness, what is the actual experience of that? And we begin to see that that's not so helpful. But not to repress it, as you did not do, you know, but to, you know, kind of, wow, this is so interesting how the mind can have both of these things happening at the same time. And maybe recognizing or exploring the pain of the mean-spiritedness and the heart-opening quality of the forgiveness. So it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention.